surveillance, self-immolation, and the courage to question the consensus. A deeply disturbing incident at a lower Manhattan building housing Google offices and an NYPD facility on Friday deserves more attention than it received amid the week's larger stories. John Butch, 63, allegedly used lighter fluid to set himself on fire in the lobby. He survived and has been charged with arson. No details about his motivations have yet emerged, but the act of self-immolation has historically carried specific political or protest meaning, from Mohamed Bouazizi in Tunisia in 2010, whose act triggered the Arab Spring, to multiple instances of protest self-immolation in democratic countries in recent years. The fact that the building houses both a major technology company and a law enforcement facility adds symbolic ambiguity that investigators are presumably working to understand. The mental health dimension is real and demands sensitivity. Butch's specific motivations may be entirely personal. What can be acknowledged is a detectable pattern of heightened frustration directed at large technology companies in recent years, ranging from congressional testimony confrontations to physical incidents at offices. The DeSantis order removing Flock safety license plate reader cameras from Florida state roads connects to a broader surveillance conversation becoming genuinely important in American political life. Flock's network has grown to cover thousands of municipalities, creating and aggregate a real-time database of vehicle movements across large portions of the country. Individual camera deployments are typically approved at the local level with minimal public debate. The cumulative result is a surveillance infrastructure that did not exist a decade ago and that was never the subject of comprehensive democratic deliberation. Whatever the political motivation behind DeSantis's order, it is substantively a civil liberties action that may prompt similar reviews in other states. The week's most consensus-laden claim, that Iran's Hormuz closure represents a winning leverage play for Tehran, deserves stress testing before it hardens into conventional wisdom. The standard analysis holds that the pain of closure falls disproportionately on U.S. partners and rivals in Asia, giving Iran asymmetric pressure without exposing Washington's domestic consumers. The key assumption underlying this framing is that Iran's leadership is making the closure decision with a unified internal calculus, that hardliners, moderates, and the supreme leader's circle are all reading the same leverage play. That assumption may be wrong. If there is significant internal division within Tehran, and if the maximalist conditions are deliberately unachievable because some factions want the strait to stay closed and need political cover for that preference, then what looks from the outside like a sophisticated three-party leverage operation may actually be an internal Iranian factional fight playing out through a. The Oman transit deal, negotiated quietly and then publicly conditioned on demands Washington is almost certainly not going to meet wholesale, follows an unusual sequence. Negotiate first, attach unachievable conditions second. Geopolitical instrument. The signals to watch. Divergence between statements from Iran's foreign ministry, which tends toward pragmatism, and statements from the Revolutionary Guard, which tends toward maximalism. If those two voices begin saying different things about the conditions for reopening Hormuz, the apparent unity is fracturing, and a deal may come faster and on different terms than the current standoff implies.